Welcome. So good to have you this 4th of July weekend Sunday. And, you know, as we celebrate our worship services on a week-by-week basis, we're tied to what's called the liturgical calendar. And the liturgical calendar is basically the calendar of dates and holidays that the church has recognized for, well, many hundreds of years. And this gives us things like the season of Pentecost, which we're in the season post-Pentecost, which sometimes is called ordinary time. Not for the reason you think. It's not called ordinary time because it's boring and nothing's happening. It's called ordinary time because during this period, we number the Sundays. First Sunday after Pentecost, fifth Sunday after Pentecost, 22nd Sunday after Pentecost. And when you number something that way, those numbers are called ordinal numbers. And so when we say that it is ordinary time, it means that we're using ordinal numbers to measure the number of Sundays after Pentecost that we're in. So we're in ordinary time. Now, it just so happens that ordinary time also means nothing exciting is happening in the life of the church. We don't have a Christmas or an Easter or a Lent or an Advent or something special like that coming up. It's just sort of that long span of days from Pentecost Sunday all the way through till the beginning of Advent, when really kind of nothing all that exciting really is happening. Now, during that period of time, the church does celebrate other holidays. And when I say the church, I don't mean all churches everywhere. It just so happens some churches celebrate national holidays and other churches don't. And one of the national holidays that not all Christian churches celebrate is, of course, the one we're in right now, the 4th of July. As it happens, many churches don't recognize national holidays. They don't have a 4th of July celebration or a Memorial Day celebration or a Veterans Day celebration. It's not that they're saying that those things are unimportant, merely that those things are not a part of the church calendar. Now, I have always supported doing national holidays as part of our worship on Sundays. Why is that? Well, it's not that I necessarily feel that as Americans, we have some special and unique connection to God, that God celebrates the 4th of July because we're special. I'm not saying that America's not special, but merely that if I were living in Mexico, you know, and I were doing worship service on, say, the 5th of May, well, that's Cinco de Mayo, it's a minor holiday in Mexico, nowhere near as big as we think it is here in the United States. Or if I were in England and maybe we were celebrating an entirely different holiday that's part of the national calendar there in England, I would bring that up and have that be a part of our worship. Why? Because we live here. We're a part of this particular portion of the world. What happens around us affects us. And what we do affects what happens around us. And so since we're a part of this world, we're not of this world, but we're in it, and we have an influence over it, then the church, I feel, must have a voice in how we understand what is happening around us. What's happening around us right now is obviously the 4th of July. If you read my newsletter, you know that the 4th of July is sort of the day that the Founding Fathers signed the Declaration of Independence. It is the day when most of the delegates ratified it. The New York delegation had to go back and get permission from their actual Congress in New York before they could officially endorse it. And then, of course, they had to send it to the printer to have it printed before everybody could put their actual signatures on it. It's a whole thing. But in the theory of what happens in that time, in the philosophy of what is happening in that moment, that is, on the 4th of July, the day when the leaders of our country officially raised their hands and said, yes, it's time for us to form a more perfect union. It is time for us to go about the business of creating a government of the people, by the people, for the express purpose of ensuring life, liberty, and allowing people the pursuit of happiness. Now, an important thing to know about what they did. Now, many of us have sort of genetic heritages here in the United States. So we can say, well, I'm mostly German, but I'm partly Scottish, and I'm a little Irish, and I'm a little English, and I'm a little teeny tiny bit Swedish. And, you know, we can sort of either trace that through our family histories, or maybe we've done a genetic test. Most of us know that we are from somewhere else. Like I said, I myself am mostly German and mostly English and Scottish and Irish and a little teeny tiny bit Swedish. So that's in my genetics, and perhaps you have your own nation that you come from, your family does. I have a lot of friends back home who were very proud that they were of Italian descent. And that's kind of interesting because Italy as a country, as we understand countries, is actually a strangely new invention. What do I mean by that? Well, obviously there's been an Italy for a very long time, and Romans in particular measure one of their civilizations back to the earliest period of human civilization. So I'm not saying that suddenly the Italian peninsula just appeared one day. What I'm saying is the notion of Italy as a nation is a fairly new invention in the history of the world. Historically, Italy was a combination of small, independent city-states ruled over by semi-independent princes who were oftentimes, more often than not, in direct competition with one another for who was going to have more power, what section was going to have more influence, who was going to have a greater sway over the world that they lived in. And if you think about the King of England or the King of France or the King of Spain, you'll notice nobody ever talks about the King of Italy. There wasn't one. And so Italy was this place that was sort of held together by these princes that were constantly battling each other, constantly trying to one-up one another, constantly trying to underhandedly take over from one another, and it stayed in this constant state of flux. But it wasn't the government that made Italians Italians. It was the fact that they shared a language, the fact that they shared a culture, a history, cuisine, styles of dress, customs, traditions. All of these things made Italy Italy, even though there wasn't a king or a central government that determined that this particular chunk of land is Italy. Now, here in the United States, we sort of formed in a similar way. We formed in the way that we had this situation where we had 13 colonies, each of them semi-autonomous from one another, each one with their own way of ruling and doing things, that all then banded together and formed a nation of states that were independent from one another, but dependent on one another. And this nation that formed wasn't a nation based on common history or heritage or genealogy or language. All of these things were mixed all over the place in the United States. Like I said, my own genetic history is German and Irish and Scotch and Swedish and Dutch and who knows what else is in there. And so it wasn't that the people here in the United States shared a common ancestry. They barely shared a common language. People spoke all sorts of different languages across the American frontier. It wasn't that they shared a common culture. People behaved entirely different in the South and in the North. And, of course, that turned out somewhat not so good in the end. What they did share was what was written down on the documents that formed the nation. They shared an idea, a belief, that if we all worked together, if our leaders were willing to set aside personal power in place of service to the nation, if we were willing to give freedom to the citizenry and then allow the citizenry to have the power to choose its leaders, that we could create a nation that ensured justice and liberty for all. And the system was built in such a way that it understood that human sin and weakness and faults were guaranteed to be a constant source of attack against that proliferation of freedom, liberty, and justice. And so things are built into the system. Our presidents aren't allowed to rule forever. They get two terms, back to back. It's complicated after that. Our senators and our congresspeople can be voted out at any point. There's no senator for life election. People within our government were supposed to be designed to be interchangeable. That when the political structure needed to be fixed, we could put new people in and take the old people out. America was designed with the understanding that the goals that we set forth for ourselves were so lofty that they were going to be out of our reach, because the goals were so grand that we would not be able to immediately reach out and grab them. It would cause us to struggle. It would cause us to strain, and it would cause us to progress ever further down the road towards freedom and liberty and justice for all. America was built around an idea that if we work together, and we work together as a nation, and we respect one another, and we uphold one another, that by following that ideal, we will always walk further down the road towards the perfect nation, even if we'll never get there. See, it was an ideal that formed us. It was an ideal that shaped us, and it is an ideal that led us. This was informed not a little bit, but wholly and completely by the guidance of the church. The men who signed their names to the Declaration of Independence, the individuals who would craft and draft and ratify a constitution, were people of faith, were people who understood that the disciples had been sent out to preach, to teach, to heal, and to bring the good news of God's grace and mercy and love in order that the kingdom of God might spread on this earth in such a way that humanity was lifted up out of its brokenness into a new relationship with God. And our founding fathers, knowing that this was the purpose of Jesus' ministry and mission for the disciples, took it upon themselves that that should be the mission of our nation, that we be a place that also strives to teach, to heal, to lift up, and to bring people into a more whole and fully way of living. So on the one hand is the kingdom of God, led by Jesus Christ for the purpose of bringing wholeness to humanity. On the other side are these men of faith who gather together to create a new nation based around ideals. Those ideals founded on their experience of faith in the kingdom of God. 200+ years have gone by. And the same ideals hold true. The same pursuit of those ideals ought to drive us forward as a nation. So as we continue to come together, as we continue to celebrate the 4th of July, and to celebrate what we have accomplished, let us never forget that the faith of our founding fathers was there to spur us on ever forward to a more perfect union, guided by the principles of faith, guided by the principles of love, guided by the principle of taking care of your neighbor. All that they learned from the kingdom of God and their faith in God was imbued into this creation that they made to be a nation guided by ideals. So I say to you all, celebrate, watch some fireworks, have a hot dog and a hamburger and a cookout and have fun with the day, but never forget that we are called ever forward as a nation and as believers who are called to guide the nation towards a more perfect union.